All right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry if we were starting a little bit late, but we will call the meeting to order at 10:05, and I believe we have quorum. So, Cindy, can you please go over meeting procedures and roll call attendance?
Thank you. We're grateful to have Edward C. Little Water Recycling Facility host us and have audiovisual support from AGP staff. Restrooms are through the door to my right and down the hall. If you need Wi-Fi, the network is WB employee, which should connect you automatically. The meeting is in a hybrid format in which members and the public are participating both remotely and in person. For remote participants, if you need technical support connecting to or using the Zoom meeting platform, please email it@agpvideo.com. This email is also listed on the meeting agenda if you need to reference it. Now, I will provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's meeting. You must be in the room or on the Zoom to make public comment. Members of the public may request a comment in the following ways. If you are in person, please fill out a speaker card located at the back table and hand it to either me or Luke. If you're participating via Zoom, you can raise your hand virtually when we reach the item under which you'd like to speak. The raise hand function is at the bottom of the screen on the Zoom app. If you're calling in over the phone, dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. This meeting is being recorded and live streamed, so we ask that you please speak clearly. Please remember to turn on your microphone when you speak and turn it off when you finish speaking. That concludes the overview of meeting logistics. Chair, I recommend we move to a member roll call for attendance.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead, Cindy.
Beginning roll call. Martha Tremblay.
Here.
Edward Caldwell.
Here.
Tom Ford.
Present.
Karen Mogus.
Present.
Carrie Nichols.
Present.
And joining us now is, I believe, Clark Stevens. Thank you. That concludes roll call. Chair, I recommend we move to the next item.
Can I introduce myself? Sorry, I thought I was on roll call.
Oh,
am I
apologies.
Not anymore?
Yes, Erica Yolinsky.
Hi, good morning. Sorry, I'm not in person. Erica Yolinsky with US EPA. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that we missed? And I know Luke mentioned, Eric, you're online. And we have maybe someone to introduce, right, Luke?
Morning.
Laura Wardrip, alternate for Karen Mogus online as well. Good morning.
Hi, Eric. Do you mind maybe introducing yourself and then introducing Helen?
Sure. Yeah. Good morning. This is Eric Gilman, counselor for the commission. And today, Helen Wolner is also on the line. I'm not sure if she can unmute and turn on. Oh, there we go.
Hello. Good morning, everyone.
Helen is also an attorney in the Office of Chief Counsel at the State Water Board. She supports the unit that works with the Division of Financial Assistance, and she will be, over the coming months, taking over for me as counsel with the commission. So welcome. Thank you. And I'll let you introduce yourself if you'd like.
Well, thank you. I think you gave all the important information about me, but I'm Helen Wolner. I'm looking forward to learning about how this all works and observing you all with Eric's support over the next few months and then transitioning to being a legal counsel for you all. I actually grew up in Santa Monica Bay, so I'm really excited to be taking over this position.
And I would just mention also that I'm not going anywhere. I'm just moving to another assignment within the Office of Chief Counsel at the State Water Board. So I will continue to be a resource for Helen and the team.
For which I'm very thankful.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Eric, for all the support and help you've provided us. And I'm glad you're staying on. And Helen, welcome. Look forward to meeting you in person. But welcome. Welcome to everyone online and everyone here. We'll go ahead and get started with the items on the agenda. The first is comments from members of the public on items not on the agenda, and I believe we got requests for one public comment. We can go ahead with that.
We did have a request. I'm not seeing a member of the public online, and I'm not seeing a public commenter in the room.
Okay, well, I think as the meeting goes through, if we get a raised hand or we see the member of the public here, we can give them the time. So, yes, Tom?
Yeah, I was just contacted that one of the members of this committee, Michael Quill, was trying to join, but he was having issues. So I was just trying to bring that to everybody's attention. Not sure if there's anything we can do on our end to send him a new link so he may be able to access the meeting.
I'm just at this moment good to go, folks. Sorry about that. Here we go.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, Michael. All right. So with that, let's move on to the next item, which is related to the order of the agendas. The agenda, there's no change that's proposed by staff at this time. Does anyone have any requests? What if you could clean your retainer? Okay, hearing none. Item 2B, report from the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, the administrative director, and the National Estuary Program Director. So I think Luke will go first, and then...
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'll hand it off to you, Tom, after I've brief comments today. So since the last meeting, Commission staff continued to work with the Bay Foundation and governing board members on the revised draft action plan, and we had a public comment period on that plan that ran from December 12th, 2025 to January 2nd, 2026. And we will get back to that in this agenda. So there will be more of a in-depth update on that later in this meeting. Commission staff also continued to work with the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project and the Technical Advisory Committee on the Wetlands State of the Bay chapter, which was presented to the governing board in December. The written document that they are producing is still a work in progress, so they've been working on collecting comments from other technical advisory committee members, as well as other experts in the field. And a preview of what's to come, we have another State of the Bay chapter that will be worked on very soon. The Rocky Reef chapter of the report will be compiled by Occidental College, and we anticipate that will be complete by early summer. And then finally, I regret to inform everyone that Caitlin Gray has stepped away from the commission. She's stepped away to focus on family. So Caitlin served on the commission since 2019, a very long time, about 7 years. And Caitlin successfully navigated it through some pretty difficult times, including the pandemic, where she was the only staff member running the commission. So she was invaluable to the commission. She'll be greatly missed by myself as well as the program in general. So I will keep you all updated on my efforts for hiring to fill that position. And once there is a job posting, I just ask that you all, distribute it amongst your networks. So I will keep you up to date on that process. And that concludes my remarks. I'll pass it over to Tom Ford.
Yes, thank you, Luke. And yes, considerable amount of work going on with the revised CCMP, and as I know, it is elsewhere later on the agenda. So I think we can speak to the draft action plan in more detail at that point in time, but appreciate all of Luke's efforts and that of many of the members who submitted comments and a few folks in the public who did so as well. I'm excited to think that we're getting close to getting that done, and I anticipate that Erica may have some things to share with us today on that matter as well. As for those of us over the, maybe over the holiday break, a lot of internal work at the Bay Foundation, just getting things finished up with the close of quarter, end of year. So nothing too exciting unless you really want to explore the annals of administration with me. What I will say is that heard from both the executive committee as well as other members of the commission, interest in some updates on some of the ongoing projects that have been funded through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So I've been in touch with the leads and state parks that are working on the Adamson House, and we're advancing towards 65% design on elements there to help reduce erosional forcing along the beachward facing aspect of that property. Be happy to come in and share the progress on that project with this body sometime later this year. As that's all falling together, we're looking at maybe late spring, early summer, and I think that that probably fits well with our calendar based on what we have yet to do. Getting close to final results and near finished draft of work on the beach visitorship study based on cell phone data and some intercept work out there on the beaches to help us understand what the value of a data point associated with a cell phone may be. And again, the purpose of that project was to try to identify the geographies from which people are traveling to the beaches, the amount of time that they are spending there. And in some cases, we can narrow down the spatial, I'm trying to find the right word, smaller spatial geographies on a beach associated with certain coastal assets that may be preferentially being used by folks that are there. Walking out onto a jetty to fish, going to the pier, or, hey, I just hung out in the parking lot. All those types of things so that we can get a better idea on that. And I think there's a lot of potential applications there. Certainly a lot of interest from some of our first responders and other folks that have management responsibilities along our coastline for that data. And then lastly, working with Karen Martin from Pepperdine University with the Beach Ecology Coalition and putting together a certification training program for folks that are operators on our beaches, be that maintenance staff, monitoring staff, lifeguards, other first responders, so that they can understand the ecology that they are interacting with when they're out there with their vehicles or other machinery, what to look out for. So that's getting very close to being done and it's really drawn some regional interest. It was intended to be effective on a regional basis. Basically, a lot of things that are endemic to Southern California or our coastline here really are what we're focusing in on that training. So all those folks who are the leads of those are very excited to have an opportunity to come give you folks an update and tell you where they're at. As for just a couple touches as to what's been happening just this past week or so, we recovered two acoustic Doppler current profilers off the Santa Monica Pier. These devices are used to help measure water motion in three dimensions, and these additional data will help us further refine a model that's being generated out of Timu Galeen's lab at UCLA so that we can understand some of the currents and other drivers of water movement around the Santa Monica Pier breakwater. Many, many applications for the use of those models to help us understand how we may better protect the pier, how we might alter the breakwater, how we may try to improve water quality, perhaps increase local production to have better catch off of the pier and perhaps even healthier catch there. So that's super exciting work that's coming together, and I expect that later this calendar year we'd also be prepared to be able to give a presentation on what's happening with that. And then pardon me for being a little casual today, but I just left the beach. We're putting in about 7 acres of dune habitat starting south of the Santa Monica Pier. Today is a big installation day for that, so we're just getting underway. We opened up a new email address, dunes@santamonicabay.org, for folks that want to contact us directly and have some questions about what's happening out there. We've also put up a bunch of material on the Bay Foundation website, which is santamonicabay.org, and you go to Protecting Beaches, and that'll orient you to what it's doing, including some FAQs and other materials. But that's been about the bulk of it.
Could you give us a cross street for the Dune project?
Oh, I absolutely can. If you take Bicknell down across and down into the parking lot, so essentially just south of Casa del Mar, just south of Santa Monica Pier, and then these various dune sites are strewn along the back beach, neighboring the bike path and pedestrian path, all the way down to where Santa Monica State Beach meets Venice Beach, right there at Marine Street, which is sort of just north of Rose. Rose would be the main artery coming in there, including a large feature that is a medicine wheel or a sacred hoop that is a central part of a lot of spirituality and cultural traditions amongst North American First Nations, folks of Turtle Island, and we're excited to be developing that feature and furthering engagement with Tongva and other local tribes on its interpretation, its presence, and getting folks to understand the value of what that symbol is.
Great. Is that a dune formation item? Is it creating dune?
Yes, very it nice. Is creating dune. So okay. we're using I'm sorry, Claire, I know you know these things, man. I can send you the plant palette. I can put that all up for anybody that wants it.
Linear feet. I'm curious how many linear feet that is. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know in the depth and all. I'm just familiar with the project. So
yeah. So I would say, firstly, at this stage, much of this work should have discernible habitat value, and we've already seen some very nice responses, especially among the plovers in Santa Monica Beach. There's 60, 70 of them around some of the sites that we've established, hoping to see some more of that. A few of the features are just behind the berm of the beach and on king tides or storm-driven events. We see tidal interaction with those, and we're collecting data on that to see how they stand up to inundation. The response to the plants, how they may be allowing the coast to progress or slow retreat. So it really starts to become evidentiary for us to understand how they might help with erosion and sea level rise in the future.
You might do a presentation on this for the larger.
I'd be happy to do a presentation for the larger on this as well. It's certainly a very exciting project. We anticipate putting out close to 30 acres of dune habitat on that beach over the course of this coming year.
Both the data of users and the data relative to dune establishment and what it's doing and not doing is really interesting.
Very good.
So would love to see that at some point.
Appreciate that, Clark. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for the awesome report and progress, and definitely looking forward to the pictures. And with Luke's report, we'll definitely miss Caitlin and wish her the best. And I think Erica has her hand up.
Thank you, Martha. Yeah, thanks, Luke and Tom. I'm really excited that all the projects that you mentioned, Tom, are kind of coming together. It's exciting. You know, we were sitting in a room maybe, 3-4 years ago, and those projects were approved, and now many of them are coming to fruition. So I'm excited to hear more. And I've seen some of the chapters of the Beach Ecology Coalitions of their, I'm going to call it classroom material. That's not the right thing. Training material. To see more of what folks are saying. And then just ending with a question. So you said you're doing 7 acres, and that you've got 30 more that you're doing this year. Is that right? At Santa Monica Beach?
Yeah. Sorry. Great question, Erica. We anticipate putting down 30 acres in total. We'll get 7 acres initially established today of that 30, leaving us another 23.
Okay. That's awesome. I'm excited to see it someday. I will be there in person. All right. Thanks.
You got it.
Thank you, Erica. Any other questions, comments online? Or all right. Hearing none, we can move on to the next item of the agenda, which is consideration of approval of the November 20 meeting minutes. At this time, there's no changes proposed by staff, and I do have to thank you, Luke and Cindy. The minutes are very detailed, and I really appreciate your effort there. Any revisions, comments, or is someone ready to make a motion for approval of the minutes?
I'll move to approve.
Right. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Carrie. Cindy, can we please do a roll call vote?
Yes. Let me share my screen for the roster. I will begin the roll call vote using a randomized order. When I call your name, please state your vote. I recommend not voting on meeting minutes for which you did not attend the meeting or you did not watch the video. Starting with Carrie Nichols.
Yes.
Clark Stevens.
I'll abstain.
Michael Quill.
Yes.
Karen Mogus.
Yes.
Edward Caldwell.
Abstain.
And Martha Tremblay.
Yes.
The item passes.
Thank you, Cindy. So with that, we can move on to our next item, which is to establish the February 19th Governing Board meeting agenda. And I believe for this, we have a request for public comment. We can go ahead and take that now.
Thank you, Chair. We have one request for public comment. Could we please get a timer for 4 minutes on the screen, please? And the attendee will need the ability to unmute. Walter, you should have the floor now.
I had signed up to speak on 2E specifically. Is it okay to see whatever discussion and staff report happens there before I speak? Should be the CCMP.
Oh, 2E. Sorry about that. Looks like there's a, I apologize for that, Walter. Looks like there was a typo on the agenda. So, we will get to that on 2E. That's my error. We are actually on 2D. Just letting everybody know. There was a typo in the agenda. I'm just noticing now. We're on 2D at the moment, or what should be 2D.
Okay, I agree. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. And yes, it's so item 2D is establishing the governing board meeting agenda. Luke, do you want to introduce that item and kind of walk us through what's being proposed?
Thank you, Chair. Yes. So we will be going through the items to put in front of the governing board on January 19th. The first item to be considered for that will be consider approval of the CCMP draft action plan. An update to the Santa Monica Bay National Estuaries Program's action plan has been in development for the last 2 years. So after consideration of hundreds of public comments and numerous commission meetings dedicated to discussing the plan, the Bay Foundation is poised to present the governing board with an updated action plan for consideration of approval. An update on the remaining comments on the action plan will be discussed later in this agenda, but the Bay Foundation does anticipate having a final version ready before the February meeting. So staff recommend putting this item on the governing board's agenda, and happy to take any questions or comments on that.
Any comments?
Okay. We will, as I mentioned, we will have more discussion on that later. The next item to consider putting on the governing board agenda is the election of 7 entities to the governing board. So the memorandum of understanding of the commission stipulates that voting governing board members shall nominate and elect 7 entities, 7 basically at-large seats, to serve as voting members on the governing board for 2-year terms. Those terms are coming to an end, so it is recommended that we hold an election. The seats available are include 2 representatives from the environmental or public interest organizations, 2 business community or economic interests in the watershed, and 3 at-large representatives. The current elected members filling those seats are Black Surfers Collective, Los Angeles Waterkeeper, West Basin Municipal Water District, Los Angeles City Tourism Department, Heal the Bay, Santa Monica Travel and Tourism, and the Resource Conservation District of the Santa Monica Mountains. This item is, if this item is approved for the February Governing Board meeting, the nomination period would be open from January 16th, that is tomorrow, and it would close on February 5th. Floor nominations would also be possible during the February 19th governing board meeting. So there will be a nomination period, but also the ability to do floor nominations. And those election procedures, as well as a list of nominations, will be provided ahead of the governing board meeting, so folks understand you know, who's being voted in. Any questions or comments on that election?
Questions? I do have a question, Luke. So, and will an email go out to everyone and with information that the period's starting and what they need to do?
Yes. So the plan was to send an email to the entire governing board tomorrow with an explanation of what's being asked of them.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Any, I think, next item?
The next item is, so we have election for governing board members. We also have appointment of technical advisory committee members to consider here. So the technical advisory committee functions as a non-biased scientific panel that provides technical expertise to support the mission, goals, and objectives of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission. Main deliverables provided by the TAC include the comprehensive monitoring plan and the State of the Bay report, which is currently in progress. The Technical Advisory Committee last met on December 1st to confirm the willingness of current members to continue to serve, and they also finalized their recommendations for new members. 8 of the current TAC members are seeking reappointment, with no changes proposed for the current chair and vice chair of the TAC. And since the last appointment, TAC member Dr. Elvina Mahinto from SCORP has resigned, unfortunately, to focus on other work. And commission staff are still following up on some potential new additions to the TAC. So the TAC named some folks who might be a good addition. We're still working on seeing if they'd be interested in participating. So that's where we're at on TAC appointments. I'm happy to take any comments or questions on that.
Are you still looking for suggestions of folks to look into for the TAC?
If you have some, yes, I would take some suggestions. Just bearing in mind that we have about a month.
Yeah.
If you approve this on the February agenda, we would have about a month to get that person on board.
Okay. Thank you.
And Erica, you have a question?
Yeah. Thank you.
So this, the confirmation of appointment, this happens every 2 years, or is it a longer time period? Can you remind me?
TAC members serve a 2-year term.
Okay. And there's no minimum or maximum number of TAC members, right?
Correct. No minimum or maximum. The TAC kind of regulates that internally.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess lastly, if for whatever reason you're not able to get a hold of or get confirmation from folks before the next meeting, but are after that, there's still opportunity for those folks to participate as a advisor, is that right? Or in some capacity, if they're available?
Our TAC meetings are open to the public, so any interested parties are welcome to attend and provide comments and participate in discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Or are we ready for a motion to set the agenda for the governing board meeting?
Can I ask a question before you vote?
Sure.
So is this for all, I just need a reminder, is this only for items that the governing board votes on and not informational items, or is it for everything, the whole slate?
This is the whole slate of items.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the past, so apologies if I just don't remember, but we've had the draft work plan, and I realize you're working on the CCMP and things are busy, and that involves a lot of writing. So I just want to know what Tom and folks think, you know, what you want to do with the draft work plan and when you want to present that, because if it's not February, I know we've talked internal, you know, at small meetings about different dates, but I'd love to hear what you're thinking. And I just don't, if you had intended it to be February, I didn't want it to get left off. So I guess this might be more for Tom. You're pointing at yourself, I think. Thanks.
I can set the stage a little bit. Erica, you are correct. In previous years at the February meeting, the work plan is introduced. However, the circumstances are different this year given the update to the action plan that is anticipated. So, Tom, if you have more to elaborate on, I'll hand it over to you.
I appreciate that, Luke, and thanks, Erica. Hopefully what I'm about to say will add clarity and I think be reflective of conversations that we've had. With the amount of attention and work, and grateful for all of it from, again, members of the public as well as the commission, informing the new CCMP, we've learned a lot, we've heard a lot, and annual work plans are developed from or derived of that overarching CCMP. So barring any really big shakeups or, hang on, let me say this a different way. If things move smoothly and we have an action plan that is approved in February, then we should be able to develop the annual work plan from that, I think, expeditiously. And what I would like to suggest is that then the EC have a chance to vet that plan at our March meeting, so that we could then, with the confidence and consideration imbued therein, bring it to the April governing board meeting and have it considered for approval in April at that meeting. Normally, yes, in past years, we would bring it to a February meeting, gain input from the members there, and we'd bring it back in April with the CCMP action plan taking up some of that time and space, and for us to hit on our deadlines to be able to submit this to the EPA no later than June 1. That seems to be the pathway, I think, for the process here. We've got confidence that it will get it done. We obviously need to figure out some of the comment period associated with that. But that's roughly the sketch as to way I think we could get this done.
Thank you, and sorry to put you on the spot. I just wanted to kind of have that clarified here. So that's helpful. I don't know if folks have questions, but it makes sense to me.
Maybe just one further point, Erica. We looked at the schedule for the executive committee in March, which was moved a week later to avoid conflicts with Ramadan. And then we asked for the governing board meeting in April to be pushed back a week as well in order to allow enough time for us to go from the EC meeting, get a copy out to the public and the commission, so they had ample time to take a look at that before moving into the governing board meeting in April to get this all finished. So that was some of the calendaring that was done last time around, or two times ago, if I remember correctly. Just want to let you know that we've been trying to tune things up in that direction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Right, are we ready to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Great. Cindy, can we do roll call vote, please?
Thank you, Chair. I will once again be calling on everyone in a randomized order. When I call your name, please state your vote. Starting with Michael Quill.
Yes.
Thank you. Carrie Nichols.
Yes.
Edward Caldwell.
Yes.
Karen Mogus.
Yes.
Clark Stevens.
Yes.
Martha Tremblay.
Yes.
Thank you. The item passes. I recommend we move to the next item.
Great. Thank you, Cindy. So the next item is 2E, discussion of member and public comments on the draft action plan. And we do have a request for a public comment, but the request is to have Luke present, and then we can go from there.
Thank you, Chair. So this is a discussion item for executive committee members. I have some slides to present, and just to give you a heads up, Erica, I will be calling on you pretty soon here to...
Okay, thanks.
I'll give you a cue, but just wanted you to be ready, and I will present your slides when the
time
comes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Bear with me, folks. Okay, so we are discussing revisions to the Comprehensive Conservation Management Plan Action Plan. You folks have been used to having discussions on this topic. This has been a standing item at executive committee meetings going back 2 years now, I believe. In this discussion today, we will first review CCMP components, and that's when I'll call on you, Erica. For assistance there. Second part of this discussion will be focused on reviewing our discussion from the December governing board meeting, just to refresh everyone's memory. And then finally, we will review the latest comments that we received on this action plan. So starting with number one there, I've presented this slide a number of times to the commission, and this is a breakdown of all the components of a comprehensive conservation management plan. So it's the CCMP isn't just one document. It's this a group of documents. And the action plan listed at the top is the one being updated. That being said, the US EPA has does allow for multiple documents to be incorporated into one another. They do have a set criteria for what fulfills the requirements for these documents. So the EPA does allow some incorporation here, which is important for you all to understand, because this action plan is more than just one component. The action plan actually has some subcomponents. So, Erica, if I hope I've set you up in a good spot there. I'll share your slides to take it from here.
Okay, thank you. My internet seems to be unstable, so I'm going to keep my camera off. Let me know when I don't see the slides. Oh, there we go. Can you all hear me okay? I can't see you, so I need someone to yell out. Okay, thank you. So I have four slides. There's no pretty pictures. It's I just kind of wanted to go through a lot of this. Luke has said, Tom has said, I have said over the past months and years, but I just wanted to share, because what will happen, right? This is your CCMP. CCMPs are locally derived documents. We try to be part of the process from the beginning, and then EPA does have an approval role. So that's why I try to be as transparent as I can with everyone with whatever information I'm allowed to share. So this is me. Next slide, please. So as Luke was just saying, there are multiple elements or documents, components, the CCMP. So what you've been reviewing over this past many months, the action plan, and I think that's, I want a better analogy than saying that's the meat of the document, but that's a big part of it, right? And then within that, I think it's this, the NEP directors and commission's strategy is to include within that the finance strategy. So that's why you've seen dollar signs. Hope maybe you've gotten questions, or others have gotten questions about, cost estimates for projects, to kind of see, what's available, what's the need. So if Tom or Luke or someone, calls you or your partners for information, it's helping feed this. And then the habitat protection and restoration strategy, I think that's very much goal one of this action plan. Communication and outreach strategy, I think, if I have the number wrong, that fits nicely into goal two. The governance description, so you updated and approved your MOU 2 years ago. And so this document will eventually include a description of, what are the components of this NEP? So that piece, the governance, the MOU that is done, that doesn't need to be reopened until you decide it needs to be. And as Luke said, these can be standalone or wrapped within. And I think for this, like the monitoring plan, that it's my understanding that's going to be updated later on. Should I pause here for questions or go to the next slide?
There's no questions here. Anyone online?
Okay, next slide. Thanks. Okay. So when we're reviewing, I have two slides for this. So this, and I want to say that these slides don't include everything. It's not exhaustive, but just to give you a sense, obviously clear linkages to Clean Water Act Section 320. That's our part of the Clean Water Act. That defines and establishes the National Estuary Program. We want to know, what has changed from the previous CCMP. So that's the appendix, or the walkthrough document. I think it's Appendix A that staff have developed. Obviously, a map. Like, what's your geography? What is your study area like? Next slide, please. Within your actions, we're looking for that you've identified what are your priority problems, the stressors, and that you have environmentally meaningful goals and measurable outcomes. And I know staff have been working really hard to make reporting on this, you've been working towards structuring the document so that it's easier to report this out, I think, in the future. And then the vulnerability refers to this NEP completed their, your vulnerability assessment, I think in 2016. So EPA is asking that NEPs look at your vulnerability assessment. Is it still relevant? And then looking at, you know, what adaptation strategies do you need to have in place? And I think those are very much in goal one, the habitat focus goal. And then I think goal two, there's also for water related elements within there that would fit. So I think I just want to give you a sense in writing of, you know, the things that we're looking for and that we have to kind of check the box and describe that you've done as we review. And then I'm hoping, you know, if you have questions, I'm happy to try and answer. And then I think Tom is also talking after this. So that's all I have. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Erica. Tom, you have some.
Yeah, Erica, you're doing very well, especially in spite of not being able to see us or judge our reactions. If you wouldn't mind, or we can tackle this later, because the vulnerability assessment and adaptation strategies,
yeah.
I think you covered the vulnerability assessment well. We currently have one. I think the general sense is that it is in many places still very relevant. Mm-hmm. The TAC has, I think, shared, I think that's a fair way to describe it, that once the action plan and some of these other pieces are finalized, then they would be able to best undertake an effort to revise the monitoring plan, which may then end up with some alterations and adjustments for that vulnerability assessment itself. But I was curious if you could share a little bit about what it means for adaptation strategies to be defined, or how they've been defined perhaps in other CCMPs, so that folks might have an idea what's coming their way.
Okay. I think I can better define at a later date what other CCMPs have done. So okay. I'm reviewing two others that were approved this past, or one that was approved, and then because our guidance was updated. And so this is newer language. I'm not trying to skirt this. I just want to give you a better example when I have one. What's in our guidance and what's in the Clean Water Act, and I'm just going to read it, if that's okay. And if it's not, I can't see your faces. No, I don't. Apologies. Basically, you know, looking at your vulnerability assessment and then what adaptation, there are seven things that are listed kind of within the most recent revision of Section 320 of the Clean Water Act. So just vulnerabilities in most of our estuaries, warmer summers, warmer winters, warmer waters, increasing drought, increasing storminess, sea level rise, and ocean acidification. And I know that's not everything, but that those pose risk to, you know, water quality and habitat goals for our NEPs. So addressing the effects of those events. I feel like you would actually do a better job of describing an adaptation. You did this morning with the dune restoration project. Okay, we have king tides and rising sea levels. So how are our dunes going to, you know, you're implementing and studying how you're adapting and to those impacts. Am I getting anywhere close to what you were asking for?
You nailed it, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that is a good example, and certainly one that came up earlier.
Okay.
What I would just submit is that not all actions within or activities within the action plan would necessarily be defined as something that is an adaptation strategy to those stressors that Eric elicited. Doesn't make them less valuable or less important. I don't think there's any ordination or prioritization suggested in that. But what I think we'll be able to do is take those lists of activities that we've already identified and be able to say, hey, you know what, this one is an adaptation strategy to these vulnerabilities that this effort is really expected to directly address. I don't think that we've laid that out for folks. This will be a new piece that folks will see as part of the, as we're collectively calling it, the action plan. So I just wanted to spend a little time here with you all so you could try to catch up with our description of it.
Okay, thank you. Luke?
Okay, thank you, everybody. I will continue with my presentation. Thank you, Erica. Moving on to the second portion, one moment, second portion of our discussion, reviewing what we discussed in December. Just again to refresh everybody's memory and see if there are any lingering comments from that. At the December 2025 Governing Board meeting, there was a discussion item on the action plan. The Bay Foundation presented the latest version of the draft action plan, and just have some brief highlights from that discussion. So goal 6 of the revised draft action plan, which is the goal focused on emergency preparedness and extreme event preparedness, it was decided that that goal will need to be worked on in the coming years, just because there was not enough time to come up with concrete actions and activities. Tribal engagement is prioritized. There are some additions to the action plan, the draft action plan. There is also a need to address environmental flows. Based on our previous discussion, and we will get into that a little later today. And then finally, there was some discussion regarding the Biona wetlands and how the Biona wetlands activity in the draft action plan needs further revisions regarding community restoration efforts. I'll pause there. Does anybody have anything they'd like to add that I might have missed? If not, I will move on. And as we move to this last portion of the discussion, some of those topics on that last slide will come up. Now we will discuss the latest comments we received. So as I mentioned earlier in the meeting, there was a public comment period. I'll just review all of the public comment processes that we've had to date. So from 2021 to 2025, staff collected and considered public comments from work plan processes. So we always have a annual workshop where we invite the public to come give their input on the work plans. So we've collected a lot of that public input and considered it for this action plan update because a lot of that feedback was relevant. From August 21st to October 20th of 2025, there was a written public comment period on the first draft of this action plan. On September 23rd, 2025, there was a virtual community member workshop, again, where community members could come give their input on the draft action plan. And then the final process was December 12th to January 2nd. There was a written public comment period on the revised draft action plan. So the August 21 and the December 12th comment periods were on different versions of that action plan. So just wanted to call that out. And now I'll review the latest public comments we received during that December to January comment period. So there was a recommendation for acquiring coastal land in Malibu, and there were some recommendations regarding community restoration efforts in Biona wetlands. And in response to that comment, the second one, that also came up at the governing board meeting. And the result from that discussion was that the Bay Foundation needs to follow up with CDFW to ensure that the Biona Wetlands Restoration Project is accurately depicted in the action plan. But I'll pause here if folks have any questions or comments.
So question on comment number one, and how and if something like that would be incorporated. I guess is it as simple as that statement, or for instance, the mechanism, there's one way is, right, we would want to be specific about what we mean. I think I would look at number one as an opportunity to help Prop 13, old culture, third owner that is underinsured and therefore unable to rebuild financially. And so there might be a public option or a conservation easement leveraged option that could be developed, but that alone looks like a taking potentially. I'd want to clarify that I think there's an opportunity to be of assistance there, but wouldn't want it to appear, it should be phrased in such a way that it doesn't appear like it's a, I think there's plenty of opportunities to help rather than take. And so I'd love to see this incorporated somehow, but be very careful that the perception, we don't get misunderstandings out of it.
Just to clarify, our commission members that do acquire land, none of them have stated any.
They don't, but efforts. If this is a public document based on just what's out there, it would be, see, I told you so. The fire was a land grab, right? We hear things like this. And so I think we have to be really careful in any public body in how we state things like this. Providing a viable alternative to sale to the open market to the highest bidder, is the way I think that could be well-placed. But not just in general, hey, we got to get these people out of the way of sea level rise, right? Or we need rocky tidal and that's your foundation. That, this is how it will be read if we don't make it really clear. Because we all know what you just said. We can't, the acquisition entities can't take land, but the public doesn't know or understand or maybe even care about that nuance.
The question I guess to the to you, Clark, would be, do you see this as falling under the purview of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission?
100%. The opportunity to create transitional habitats, to go from topographic habitat restoration to bathymetric, right, all the way out through rocky intertidal, that's what we're going to lose, right? It's that zone is what we're losing. I was looking at the report of the technical committee on wetlands, and there's a whole lot of blue in that diagram now, in that circle in the pie chart of just, it's underwater now. We know a lot of that has to do with arbor construction things, but that's not going to get smaller in the pie. So if this is an opportunity to help people create a recreational public access that is accessible, equitably accessible, there's a lot of possible win-wins here. That being said, it should be pretty clear that it's not such a great opportunity for the public that the public would think about making that decision for a private landowner who suffered a huge loss, right? You want to be in as a possible help, not as a scavenger.
So I guess this is just a slide presenting the public comment received.
Yeah,
so
I'm basically saying good comment, but if it's going to be taken forward anyway, I just wanted to add that really important nuance to how it would be and should be.
Yeah, Clark, thank you for that. And I admittedly, I feel like I'm learning a great deal about the many dynamics associated with this. What I think does work in this case is that under activity 1.2.4, trust me, I've not memorized it all yet, but I can't wait to get there. And it's the acquisition of open space. And in it, the way we describe this right now, this activity supports the preservation of critical habitat, wildlife corridors by protecting open space from future development. Acquisitions reduce impervious surfaces, improve water quality, and expand opportunities for recreation, restoration, and adaptation to recurring extreme weather events.
Could we say willing seller acquisitions? Possibly.
I'm happy to take this suggestion.
This is Wood Limit. It's meaningful, right? It kind of takes 30 years of sea level rise. We'll have another document before then, but the point is that it's very clear it's not a taking, because that's just the word on the street, or the fear on the street, I should say.
Yeah, very fair.
On the PCH, not the street.
I'll take that under advisement and see how we may wordsmith that into this. I certainly would recognize that the legacy of this action or activity was, largely involved in acquisitions, largely in the Santa Monica Mountains, trying to, piece together private public spaces to add continuity and those wildlife corridors. So this is moving this down into the intertidal, subtitle, and that area of intense coastal squeeze, I think, brings up some interesting questions. So thank you for the suggested language.
Can I add something? In what you just read, is there a specific definition that's associated with open space, though, that wouldn't kind of be the same thing as, like, land that has now opened up because of a fire?
Thank you. No, it does not specify what was once not open but may be perceived as some now to be open, which I think is also central to what
you private guys land.
Are saying.
What I'm talking about is private land owned by families who want to control the destiny of the future of that place. And I think the opportunity is for them to realize the opportunity, depending on their circumstances, of, donation, discount sale, tax leveraged. I mean, it depends on the net worth. There's a lot of specific opportunity for every one of those properties there to be competitive in the private market if we can get prepared, which is what the plan is setting up. How do we do that? We're not, if someone said, hey, please, I don't want to sell to, I'm not going to name names, but there's a limited number of buyers right now on the coast. So, we'd like to, give them another option for the commons, right, for future commons.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I think you have some input there. Let's move on to the next.
Thank you, Chair. So that was an overview of the public comments received during that comment period. We've also received some member comments on the latest draft action plan. So I will walk through those, and we can have a discussion on these items. So first, there was a ask to incorporate the BITE study. So that is a large monitoring effort undertaken by SCORP every 5 years. Okay, great. I was about to say eight. Every 5 years. Large-scale monitoring program that covers all of Southern California, all of coastal Southern California. So there was a call to incorporate that BITE study into the action plan. There was an ask to include the Palos Verdes Shelf DDT Superfund site work, which has been a long-standing item for the commission. An ask to incorporate that into the document. An ask to acknowledge monitoring for contaminants of emerging concern. So This is a kind of wide-ranging topic. This was brought up by LA County Sanitation Districts, and they wanted their efforts on monitoring CECs captured. There was an ask to include technical support for aquaculture, so State Water Board plays a role in aquaculture in California, so there was an ask to include that in the document. And then finally, less substantive, but it was still important to note, there was an ask to move the Safe Clean Water Program to Action 2.1, Enhanced Water Quality. So it was originally under an action focused on water conservation. Was it 2.2? So the ask was to move that under 2.1, Enhanced Water Quality, because many of the projects put in under the Safe Clean Water Program, most of the main benefit is on water quality rather than conservation. So that was the theory behind that. So I'll stop here and see if anyone has questions or comments on what's presented on this slide.
Yeah, no, and just in terms of the BITE study, in terms of there's a lot of good water quality data monitoring that's collected that we can take advantage for the Bay to help us understand what's going on. So that was the request in terms of that incorporation.
Thank you, Chair. I'll also point out that regarding the Palos Verdes Shelf DDT Superfund site, that is separate from what's called the barrel dumping site. If folks wish to learn about that barrel dumping site, there will be a public meeting on January 20th on the latest research regarding that.
Thank you, and I think Tom has a comment.
Yeah, thank you, Luke. I was going to bring up some more clarification, I think, to that, the Palos Verdes Shelf DDT Superfund. Certainly long-standing efforts in this region to conduct meaningful outreach and education to the public as to the potential contaminants in some of the fish that they might be catching, bringing home what they may be putting themselves, their friends and family, and others at risk for. So my sense is that for that one, for us to better incorporate that, that there'll be a note that we're looking at monitoring and or technical exchange associated with that, as well as an acknowledgement for the ongoing public education and outreach regarding those efforts. That was really the only added qualifier I wish to add.
Okay, great. On to my next question, which is a topic I'm bringing back from earlier in my presentation. We had a discussion in December on environmental flows, and it really had an open ending, that discussion. So I was hoping to take a few minutes here to maybe flesh this out a little bit more and see what the commission should do regarding this topic. So just to bring everybody up to speed, water capture and recycling projects, as they become more prominent, more numerous, may alter hydrology of coastal streams and rivers. So the concern is that that may be at the detriment of stream and river ecosystems. So this topic is currently not included in the draft action plan, but governing board members have expressed interest. So my questions to you are, what are the latest efforts regarding this issue? Who's working on environmental flows or policies related to that? And how would you recommend that the commission address this issue?
I guess I remember our discussion here, and it was related to supporting like pure water, but the concept is you support recycling as long as there's no detriment to environmental flows. And I believe there's already a process that exists for surface waters. It doesn't apply to the ocean, but so I think there's something there already in place, and I don't know if we just need to, maybe it's more like a nuance. Yeah, support as long as it's not adversely affecting beneficial uses.
Yeah, so this came up, again, pertinent to not so much the Pure Water Project itself, but jurisdictions interested in possibly diverting uncleaned or first stage captured and cleaned flows that would otherwise go into the stream systems, the watershed systems of the Santa Monica coastal streams, and into the ground for future flows, and diverting them for the public good of clean drinking water that isn't imported, right? Sounds good, but I'm not seeing the mechanism for measuring that. I've also not been just participate. I've just been participating in the Yalley River flows studies, and what it shows is that everyone's interested in surface water and for lots of different things. And you've got to start with, you need to understand it. There has to be a framework for understanding what it means to use this water here rather than there, to transport, divert. I mean, I know we're trying to avoid bringing water over the Tehachapi's. That's a big diversion. But within the city and our watershed systems, allocating and diverting water for one use takes it away from another. And so I'm not ready to stipulate that there's a mechanism. I don't believe there is a mechanism that is accurately measuring those. I know when we've been asked to look at projects like at Irwemp that have changed to divert clean and drink from capture or flow through diversified and distributed cleaning so that it can stay in the watershed without the contaminants, that's not happening that I've seen. So where does that go? Where does that, you know, how should this issue be addressed? I'd love to hear from somebody else about how that intention and necessity of understanding and protecting flows, particularly in, you know, our down drought cycles. It's harder to think about it in years like this. But yeah.
I would just ask us to look at this issue and be a little bit more clear. When we use the term recycling now, we're talking about wastewater flows. Sounds like there's a, well, that's a, I want to make sure that we're talking about the same things, and these terms are being viewed in the same context that we're referring to them as. Because when we talk about diverting storm flows and capture, and people sometimes utilize those terms, recycling, whether it's in the city of Santa Monica with their SMRF program and stuff like that. But I want to make sure that we separate those issues out a little bit so that we can focus in on what recycling typically refers to in the water industry, which is taking wastewater and treating it.
And defines wastewater, because you mentioned storm flows, and that's what I've seen is regardless of you know, the winter rains running across a street, does that, now that it's been on a street, is it wastewater? It's not, right? It's future stream water. And one of the projects we were asked to approve that started a very different project was essentially that. It's like, hey, it's dirty, it runs down the streets, let's use the storm drains to capture it and send it to Pure Water. So that was the canary in the coal mine project for me. So I appreciate what you're saying. I agree. That's what I think needs to be done. We support recycling of wastewater, and wastewater is not, or is, and it's somehow defined.
The State Water Board actually defines recycling in our recycled water policy and in our volumetric annual reporting. And so that's a mechanism or a place we could point to be more clear about what we mean by recycling, because it doesn't include stormwater.
I have a recommendation. it sounds to me like this is something that needs to be clarified in the document. Sounds like there's a need to ensure that environmental flows are preserved and policies are followed. So I wonder if there's a statement that could be made in the action plan, or if we so chose, we could decide to have a resolution regarding the commission's stance on this issue. Those are two options.
So from this body, that would be a recommendation for the board to consider a resolution, or?
Yeah, that's one of the options, but I guess I would be interested, maybe Tom and Luke can work together on clarifying the language, and then we can have an opportunity to make sure it satisfies your concern and it reflects, like EJ says, you know, what is it that we're intending it to be?
Yeah, no, I think we are. I think we're certainly straddling the disciplines of policy, the impact of specificity with language as it is interpreted. Appreciate having a lawyer sitting at the table to really call our attention to that, so that we're very specific and purposeful for how we describe this, to be sure. I, just because I took it to heart, started chasing down eco-hydrology and trying to understand how that's defined within scientific disciplines. And, you know, I recognize that we have a lot of different endpoints for a lot of the water. Much of the water that is recycled, even at this very facility, ends up, you know, going into the ground to help support, you know, saltwater intrusion barriers. So, boy, oh boy, there is a lot. Trying to come up with something that makes sure we're clear, that we're not confused, or that we're trying to work at counter purposes. I'm excited to learn more about the recycled water policy of the State Board to help inform this as well. And I don't wish this to sound like I'm punting at all, but you know, as this body of investment continues to advance in our region, how do we distill that, or want to corral that to make sure that the holistic benefits that we're trying to achieve are captured might be more than just this upcoming draft in the spring, and that it's something that we want to keep making pace on. It could also be a specific topic that we could bring to the TAC for them to try to help also inform as well.
So that is punting till next year, or?
No, sir.
Okay.
No. I think between, you know, defining what we consider to be water that is recycled or water that is recyclable, right, is different than maybe wet weather or dry weather runoff or diversions that would recognize that,
right,
groundwater recharge, you know, does have impacts on future flows. In-stream flows have their benefits, and we would certainly want to ensure that those are maintained. I think that there's also, as I said, brought up last time we spoke on this, you know, been in many meetings where we've got too much water moving through
That's
some of
right.
these systems
and
because
so,
it's imported. And so now our sediment loading's off, right, this is off, right, the physical structure
is altered.
There's
too much hardscape, et cetera. But again, the point is maybe something around measurement, right? That in the consideration of any project, the cost-benefit analysis should at least measure what that water that, you know, gosh, it's just running off to the ocean. I hear things like that. It's like, yeah, in between there, and this is aquifers and trout and, right, you know, it's like, it's just wasted. It's going to the ocean. But there may be times, right? So I think it's important to say that it's just something that needs to be quantified in the consideration of the work that we support and fully understood and considered in decision-making.
I should also mention, as the State Water Board representative, that there's a significant role for our Division of Water Rights in this conversation as well. And when you talk about measurement and accounting and what are the environmental needs, that's a big role that our Division of Water Rights plays as well.
I don't like it when Clark points his finger at me anymore. Thank you. Thank you all. Again, I'm not trying to give this any light shrift, nor am I trying to pass the buck. Just let me get to work, see how far I can get down this
thank
road.
Thank you.
And then come to an understanding of what the next steps will be for us collectively on that matter. And there was a coho salmon up in Mission Creek in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I heard that. It was variously described by people that, so I was like, well, there was a steelhead there. Well, there's often steelhead there. But yes, it was a salmon, I understand, by the way. By the way, all the Chumash salmon stories are really southern steelhead stories. I confirmed this the other day. The coho, despite that, really were not in the range of story making.
Thanks for that exciting news. Just wrapping up this discussion before moving on to our public comment on this item. Just opening it up for any other issues on the document that I haven't brought up here before this goes off to the governing board.
Just, Tom, when would we expect to be able to send out the next draft to the governing board so that there's enough time so that they can consider in February?
And give me one moment. I'm trying to pull up my calendar. Might take a second, or I'm offline. Can't go into the alternate here. So we had intended to get this draft out in the first week, or I believe Monday, was it February 9th that we were shooting for, Luke? So Monday, February 9th, was when we imagined that we'd be able to incorporate all these comments and provide what we felt was a final draft for everybody's consideration. So that's what we're shooting for.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll now move on to public comment. Can we get a 4-minute timer up on the screen? Walter, bear with us one moment. Walter, you now have the floor.
Good morning, Walter Lamb, Bino Wetlands Land Trust. Speaking about the Bino Wetlands, which was one of the things on the slides, to put all of this in context, it's always good to remember that this has been a discussion that's been going on now for about 40 years. A lot of the folks in the room have been involved since the early 90s. And our goal is to not have more decades go by without meaningful progress on the Bino Wetlands. And so one of the frustrations is we sometimes feel that there's a disconnect between the creation of documents and the creation of PowerPoints and the creation of brochures and then the actual work on the ground. And, you know, given all the really in-depth discussion we've seen on other topics, it is always a little bit concerning to us that when it comes to the Bino Wetlands, it can be hard to get that same level of dialogue. And so with regard to this latest CCMP, you know, the first draft came out in August. And the first thing we noticed was that the Bay Foundation, for the first time in 20 years, was saying, hey, we're no longer a collaborative partner. We instantly asked about that. We also saw that the level of involvement had dropped from participate to support. And so we said, can we have a little clarity on this to help us comment on it? Because if we don't really understand whether it might even just be a typo, a cut and paste error, like what's the rationale, it's very difficult to provide meaningful comments. So 5 months later, we still really are just in the dark. And I know you're saying, okay, well, February 9th, we'll have a new document. We can comment on that. That's going to be a little late in the game. It was at the December meeting that there was discussion between the Bay Foundation and CDFW about, you know, getting some updated information. But that same exchange happened at the October meeting, right? It's right there in the video. Aaron Wilson says, I have more information. I'll give it to you, Tom. And then when the next draft comes out, it still is missing all the milestones that we've been talking about. And so it would really be appreciated if just today, right, all the key players are in the room, somebody could explain what's behind the Bay Foundation after 20 years saying that they're not going to be a collaborative partner, and what's behind the drop in from participate to support. I think that's really relevant for the public to understand that the NEP is lowering its level of participation in this project. To us, it seems like another in a long list of, you know, sort of red flags about where this project is heading. I think that for the collaborative partners, so we now have remaining as collaborative partners, Heal the Bay, Friends of Ina Wetlands, Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, all we've heard in the last many years from the commission is that we don't have enough staff to do anything without the foundation. And so I think it's relevant to understand what that means, that the commission is going to remain as a collaborative partner and the Bay Foundation is not going to be a collaborative partner. And then for Heal the Bay and Friends of Ina Wetlands, I will say that for Heal the Bay specifically, you know, they have a blog category called Biota Wetlands and another one called Restoration. And the last entry into that was, you know, February of 2021. So we're, you know, about 5 years after that. We're not asking these questions to be difficult. We're asking these questions, we think, informed decision-making by the commission requires a little bit better understanding of what does it mean when you're putting this information in the document. So it has definitely been frustrating. Looking forward to seeing the draft and, you know, just throwing it out there that what you adopt is going to be, you know, I think strong evidence as to, you know, where this is heading. The LA Regional Water Control Board spoke about this at their December meeting in depth. I would encourage you to read that. And then just lastly, because I know the resolution isn't on the agenda today, but it kind of ties into the CCMP. Really hoping with everything going on in the news that you recognize that there's a time and place to compromise and a time and place not to compromise on things like climate and environmental justice. So thank you very much. And I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Walter. I see one other member of the public who's online. I don't believe we have another registrant who wanted to give public comment, but if anybody else joining us online wishes to give public comment, please raise your hand now. There's no raised hands online.
Thank you, Luke. I think we're ready to move on to the next item, which is discussion of 2026 informational item priorities.
Thank you, Chair. This should be a short item. It's a discussion we usually have towards the end of each year. We try to lay out all of the informational items for the coming year. So we have the executive committee weigh in usually. So first, on the screen in front of you are all of the informational items that were identified, I guess, in 2024 by the executive committee to prioritize in 2025. And I've in bold are the topics that we actually got to. So we didn't do so well in getting to our informational item priorities. And that is because we had to shift focus to the action plan process. A lot of the executive committee's time went to the development of the action plan, which is why we didn't get to many of these. So regarding the topic of climate change, we had an info item on LA County's Coastal Resiliency Initiative. We had a presentation from LA Sanitation and Los Angeles DWP on wastewater recycling. And then there were some additional informational items that kind of popped up, including the presentation on the LA wildfires. We had numerous presenters on that item. We gave an informational item on the 2024 annual report, and we also had a SCORP presentation on their Prop 50 project. So, like I said, most of our time was devoted to action plan discussion, and these were the items we didn't get to. And there have also, since in the last year, there have been multiple items brought up that are timely that maybe should be considered for 2026, such as the Bay Foundation cell phone beach visitorship study. There's the triennial review of the LA Region's Basin Plan. That is a work in progress. The Safe Clean Water Program, there's been a recommendation to get some updates on their watershed planning process. One of our Prop 50 grantees recommended a presentation on a long-term monitoring program that they participate in called the Sentinel Sites for Nature. And then finally, as Tom mentioned earlier, one of our TAC members, Karen Martin, also from Pepperdine University, could present on the beach management training program. So there are lots of topics we can cover this year in 2026. I will need your help identifying what to prioritize. So I'll be distributing a survey after this meeting to get your input separately. I'm not asking you to kind of weigh in right now. I know you've just, you know, you're just seeing this list. You know, we could take a minute here and just see if there's anything you'd like to add to the list that can, again, be surveyed upon later.
Any thoughts? I mean, they all look good topics, but wish we had more time for stuff. Yes, Tom?
Yeah, just to keep the record clear, the cell phone data study is something that the Bay Foundation does support. We do some work with that, but it's being led by a group organized under Beacon. And so I just want to make sure that they get the credit for all the hard work they've been putting on that.
I think Erica has her hand up too.
Thank you. No, it's a good list. I wonder, this could be covered just during like member comments, but at a future time, I know there was a HABS forum or symposium. Was it in November at Hyperion? And I wonder if someone at some future date could share from that. And I realize it's hard to cram a day-long event into 5 minutes, but if there's something from that could be shared with the group, that's a request I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Erica. I'm sure we could track down somebody, some topic regarding HABS to present. Yeah, thanks.
Forgive me. What are HABS?
Harmful algal blooms.
HABS are harmful algal blooms.
Okay. Thank you.
They'll be algae that that bloom as a result of...
Well, now I know what they are.
Okay,
it was the acronym. Sorry, thank you.
Okay.
That HABS Summit actually just won an award for LA San for, I think it was like best outreach project of the year from the California Environmental Water Association, I believe. And now it won a regional award, and then now it's up for a state-level award, and that's also largely thanks to Meredith McCarthy.
And a terrific moderator of the second panel. I'm trying to remember that guy. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. Like I said, I'll distribute a survey. Sounds like, just from your feedback already, harmful algal blooms might be something to prioritize. So thank you. That concludes what I have for this item.
Great. Thank you, Luke. So with that, I guess we can move on to member comments and announcements. Any comments, announcements?
Maybe I'll say that Heal the Bay and some partners, I think the last meeting of the governing board, I mentioned the Santa Monica Pier Task Force that's looking into water quality issues around the pier. And they're going to be doing some targeted studies on January 27th and February 11th to, again, try to, like, figure out some of the potential bacterial sources. So that all is moving forward. And then next Saturday on January 24th, our aquarium underneath the Santa Monica Pier will be open for free to the public for a one-year sort of community gathering and reflection after the Palisades fire.
Thank you for sharing that. Anything else? I guess I can share that our Pure Water Southern California project, which is our partnership with the Metropolitan Water District to take water from the Warren facility in Carson that's currently going to the ocean and further treat it, purify it, and make it available for groundwater recharge. The final EIR is scheduled to go out any day now with potential consideration from the Metropolitan Water District Board in February. They're the lead agency. The Sanitation Districts is a responsible agency, so we would also certify it subsequently so that covers the actions that we intend to take. So we're excited. It's a major milestone to be close to being done with the environmental planning. We received certification from the governor and the legislature for the streamlining for, I guess it's a CEQA purposes. So that's, you know, helpful. I think there's support for this project. It is expensive, but we've got to start somewhere. But, you know, we're really excited to have this water rather than going to the ocean, having it be beneficially reused. And we've been working with Metropolitan since 2008. So we're excited. So with that, anyone else? All right. So let's move on. So next, our next governing board meeting is scheduled for February 19. At Hyperion, we have an executive committee meeting scheduled for March 26, and we still have a location, TBD. So with that, there's no closed session today, so we can adjourn at 11:40. Thank you, everyone, for your time. Thank you, everyone online.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. All, bye.